Colonel Rob Maness has a lifelong record of providing dedicated service to this nation. Having worked his way up from the enlisted ranks to full colonel, he served our country for more than 32 years. He has served as a bomber squadron commander, bomb disposal technician, Joint Chiefs of Staff Operations Officer, assisted the National Security Team with the campaign plan for the global war on terrorism. He authored the first theater nuclear war plan and served as the vice commander of America's largest airborne intelligence wing. Colonel Rob Maness is a true American hero. This is Rob Maness Live.
This is Sunday. With her initial decision in the George Peterson versus United States case, this is a case where Mr. Peterson was arrested for having unlawfully possessing without registering them homemade suppressors or something like that. That was litigated. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals said that under the National Firearms Act, that this ban on suppressors was constitutional under, among other things, the Second Amendment. They did various terrible things like conflated a registration scheme with a shall issue licensing regime and other terrible, frankly, legally wrong-headed approaches to the law. There, if you may recall, there's something like three different Fifth Circuit decisions issued by Judge Jennifer Elrod, who's usually a pretty good judge, but messed this one up, I think, and unfortunately they cannot quite unwind this. The DOJ took multiple positions in this case, but ultimately they upheld the conviction of Mr. Peterson. He sought cert, and the Supreme Court this morning just denied cert in his case, which is essentially arguing that the National Firearms Taxation and Registration Scheme that covered suppressors, i.e. a type of firearm, if you will, that this was essentially upheld as constitutional, meaning the Supreme Court denied cert over the request by Mr. Peterson and his lawyers to have cert granted to clarify whether or not things like suppressors are protected arms under the Second Amendment and whether or not the National Firearms Act was constitutional as applied to him in this case. But the Supreme Court just denied cert in this NFA case, which another is an unfortunate outcome and does not make me happy, because I think there was a strong argument for the Supreme Court to grant cert in both the Gardner case on the right to travel with your gun through states that you're not licensed in or not living in. And I think that the Peterson case, eventually, I think the Peterson view will be vindicated, which is that suppressors are protected arms under the Second Amendment. And the NFA scheme forcing them to be registered is also unconstitutional for the reasons articulated by then Judge Brett Kavanaugh in 2011 in his dissent in the Heller 2 case when he sat on the D.C. Court.
Welcome back to the Rob Maness Show, folks. It's Truth Thursday, and we're live on Worldview Tube and our X Spaces simulcast. And today we're exposing raw Biden DOJ weaponization of gun laws against law-abiding Americans. Once again, our guest, George Peterson, is a certified firearms instructor. He's a former federal firearms license holder and a Louisiana patriot who ran PDW Solutions in the greater New Orleans area. And in 2022, ATF agents raided his home and business. They seized hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal inventory. But the only charge they were able to make, possession of one unregistered 22 caliber solvent trap that George kept in a safe. George took a conditional guilty plea specifically to preserve his right to fight the unconstitutional National Firearms Act suppressor registration scheme under the Second Amendment. He appealed all the way to the Fifth Circuit and then to the U.S. Supreme Court. And on April 20th, as you just heard, SCOTUS denied cert. Appeals are exhausted. George is now headed to federal prison for 24 months, I believe. Not for hurting somebody, not for a crime of violence, but for a technical paperwork violation on a common safety device. Think about that. This is exactly what we've been warning about. Selective enforcement and regulatory traps designed to turn honest gun owners and citizens into felons, while the elite ignore the Constitution. George fought for all of us, and today he's here live to tell the unfiltered truth about what really happened, how the system has failed him, and what this means for every Second Amendment supporter in America. And I'm not sure we've got George with us yet. We were having some technical difficulties earlier. So, George, if you're there, welcome back to the Rob Manis Show, my friend. And if you're not, we'll catch you in just a few minutes. So he's not here yet, and we will get him. But what do y'all think about this? I've had several weaponization shows over the last month or so, and we're going to continue to do it. Because even though this weaponization is from the Biden administration, apparently a lot of these are on autopilot, and the Trump administration, God bless them, they're trying. I know that, and I appreciate them, and I have confidence in them. But these kind of cases ought to be looked at immediately and thrown out. Because as our opening video clip showed, folks, it's likely that events will turn and that it will be shown that this National Firearms Act registration requirement, number one, is unconstitutional, and number two, that the so-called suppressor that's in question here is part of a firearm, and this infringes on every American's Second Amendment right. What do you think, Shell?
I often wonder, sir, why, you know, our DOJ under Trump has not taken care of this issue, sir. There should be no law that supersedes the Constitution, sir.
Yeah, I think part of the challenge is that there are so many of these cases, it's impossible to find them all right away. That's what I think, because we know that the president and his attorney general and other appointees in the DOJ want to find cases like this and correct them so that our law-abiding American citizens are not hurt. And I would just add our Harmeet Dillon, who has established a Second Amendment office and the Civil Rights Office. She's the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights and is focusing on gun cases. Hopefully we can get her teams, get this in their knowledge window, and they can take a really serious look at it before this man who has small children and teenage children is a good dad, you know, a good husband, has been a loyal American citizen, has worked for his community as a volunteer on many, many, many things, is a at one point was a small business owner of a brick and mortar firearms store, and then did it out of his home for some reasons that I'm going to get him to explain here when we get him in to the show, but all with law-abiding intent. And part of crime and being proven to have committed a crime is your intent to commit the crime, your intent, rens mea, I think the lawyers call it. You have to prove that in order to get a conviction according to the law, from what I understand. When a person's intent is to follow the law and exercise their constitutional civil right of gun ownership in a valid way, in a safe way, I mean, this device was locked in George's safe, you know, so it's not like he's out there hurting anybody or being negligent. He's being a good citizen. Shouldn't we reward good citizenship and good citizens instead of putting them in federal prison, Shell?
Yes, sir. I do believe that. But we seem to reward the criminal. I don't understand that, sir.
Yeah, we do. We seem to reward the criminals. We see it every day in this country. You see it all over the social media. Now, the mainstream media doesn't cover it much because they don't like that narrative. And they have their own narrative that they want to push. But yeah, we do. Like the young Ukrainian refugee that was killed on the train for no reason other than she was a white girl. And the criminal is on video and audio saying, "I got that white bitch." He's on video saying that as after the fact. So, you know, we have these really despicable race crimes. That, if a white male was doing that kind of work, they'd be thrown in prison for the rest of their life, if not executed in that particular case, wouldn't they?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
But now they're trying to advocate for him because his mental condition, sir.
Exactly right. Well, if you have the mental condition to cut a woman's throat from behind intentionally and then walk away from it saying what he said, your mental condition is that you're a criminal you are at least should be incarcerated for the rest of your life. And the courts should get an opportunity and a jury should get an opportunity to make that judgment. That's the way our system's supposed to work, right?
Yes, sir. You would think so.
Yeah, well, we don't have George yet. Anybody got a question in the audience? We'd love to take them if you have questions.
We have AJ, sir.
Go ahead, AJ.
Colonel, referring to that stabbing murder attempt, well, actual murder, not even an attempt, the mental condition argument explains, let's say that it is true, that is the perpetrator was mentally disturbed, that explains why he did what he did. That doesn't necessarily absolve him, unless I'm wrong. Any your opinion would be appreciated.
Yeah, you know, the attempt to plead innocent or not guilty by reason of insanity is a technical term. It has to go through a technical process. Most people don't win on that type of plea. To go easy on somebody because they say they have a mental illness is not the way things should be. This guy should be incarcerated. I think he may have been released. I can't remember exactly, or the judge is talking about releasing him. He's a danger to anybody in the community. If he is that mentally unstable where you can't ride a train home from work, if you're a young white woman and not talking to anybody, just minding your own business, and your life is forfeit, then he should be locked up at a minimum in a mental institution until the trial is over and he receives his sentencing goes to prison for the rest of his life or worse. You know, he could be executed for that too. But they have to prove that not guilty by reason of insanity. They have to prove it, and I don't think that it's been proven yet. Well, we got to take our first commercial break. When we come back, hopefully we'll have George ready to go. I'll be right back. It's Truth Thursday, weaponization of the Department of Justice and our gun laws. It's happening and still happening. I'll be right back.
So today I am joined by George Peterson. His case just got denied cert at the Supreme Court. And we're going to find out what is going on with him and what the next steps are. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, John. Appreciate you having me.
Let's go ahead and get back to the beginning. What exactly happened? What did they allege that you did?
So this happened back in 2022, where it was just a typical Thursday morning, and knock on the door, next thing I know, we have 50 to 100 ATF agents and local law enforcement in my home and in my office where my FFL was, my little shop was. And basically, they came in with ballistic helmets, body armor, pointing M4 machine gun, assault weapons at me and my children, my juvenile children, ages 12, 16, and 18. They had machine guns pointed at them. And this was all over paperwork, basically.
Did you?
Welcome back to the Rob Manis Show. It's Truth Thursday. And that man right there, George Peterson, is my guest. And the Supreme Court just denied cert for his appeal out of the 5th District of the U.S. Court of Appeals on this situation. George, how did you feel when you first heard the news that SCOTUS had denied your cert?
I was highly disappointed. It's a legitimate case for the Supreme Court to take up. It was a constitutional challenge to the suppressor restrictions of the National Firearms Act. My attorneys with Firearm Policy Coalition warned me that it's not likely that the Supreme Court's going to take up an NFA case before they take up an assault weapons ban case. So, you know, they have to be able to rule on, so they want to take it in order, but I didn't, you know, plan for when the assistant U.S. attorney was going to orchestrate and coordinate this political dog and pony show to come after me and to find a unregistered suppressor. It wasn't in my plans, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, disappointed is the word.
So you had a lot of amicus briefs associated with your case, people in different groups supporting you, right? I mean, some pretty big names, right?
Every 2A group, because I'm a lifetime member of just about every Second Amendment group there is, you know, NRA, FPC, GOA, and so on and so forth. And every one of them filed amicus briefs. But the trickery of the justice system is what the people, your people, your viewers need to be aware of. In the Fifth Circuit, I had my original attorney who had filed the original appellate brief and presented oral arguments. He's a local guy. You know, yeah. He might be a general practitioner, but he doesn't, you know. It seemed to me with his presentation that he was out of his depth. Mm-hmm. I mean, he even went so far as to say something where he was filibustering in the oral argument and said that, well, you know, I worship at the altar of the court, your honors. And I'm like, why did you even say that? You know, I mean, but so because of the first ruling, the first opinion of the Fifth Circuit, whereas they agreed with the district court and the DOJ at the time that suppressors are not arms protected by the Second Amendment. But when they ruled that, the world exploded. All the YouTubers, all the, you know, 2A groups, everybody's like, what are you doing? What did they rule? And so Firearm Policy Coalition contacted my attorney and said, we want to take over the appeals because they wanted to file an en banc panel review, which is a review from the entire court. And they wanted to file an en banc. And when they filed en banc, then we had amicus briefs filing in from GOA, Second Amendment Foundation, NRA, American Suppressor Association, other groups, FRAC. So they all go two or three different amicus briefs. And so the DOJ said, no, we agree, and there's no reason for an en banc. But President Trump just got sworn in.
Yeah.
And he signed that executive order protecting Second Amendment rights for all Americans. And so 3 days after the U.S. attorney, assistant U.S. attorney here in New Orleans, filed their response to our en banc petition, 3 days later, they filed an amended response. And they did a complete 180 because of President Trump's executive order. And they said, we agree that suppressors are protected under the Second Amendment. And outright bans would be unconstitutional. However, because suppressors can be misused for criminal use, the restrictions, the regulation and taxation under the National Firearms Act is still a valid point and is nothing more than a modest burden. And we're like, there's no such thing as a modest burden in the Second Amendment. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Right. It doesn't say except for or but or whatever. So when that was filed, the three-judge panel of the Fifth Circuit came in a couple of weeks, whatever time frame later, and they rescinded their first opinion.
Same three judges?
Yeah. Oh, they kept the same three judges all throughout. And I don't even know if the full panel got to even vote on if they were going to hear my case or not, because they just railroaded it through. So we had Peterson 1.0, Peterson 2.0, and Peterson 3.0 in the Fifth Circuit. Mm-hmm. They ruled on my case three different opinions.
All out of the Fifth Circuit?
All out of the Fifth Circuit, yes. Totally unprecedented.
I've never heard of that.
So the first one they rescinded. Mm-hmm. Then they made up something new. And in Peterson 2.0, they came up with, well, this is a shall issue licensing scheme, you know, like in Bruin. And my first attorney even agreed with him in his oral arguments that it's a shall issue scheme. Mm-hmm. But it's not, because if you file an application for your to register, not to license, but to register your arm, your suppressor, if you file one of those form ones, form fours, whatever, you can get denied. It's not just a shall issue. You can get denied. But it's also not licensing. And in the Peterson 2.0.
Wait a minute. Let me understand this. So back in the day when a lot of places had gun registries, I'd go buy a gun and the registration would happen right there if I was in that jurisdiction. And they never denied a gun registration for people, but they can deny a registration for a suppressor.
So you've never registered your guns unless you're in a blue state.
Yeah.
Blue states are the only ones that have actual gun registries. Doing a background check, putting your name and everything on a form 4473 to have a background check, your gun is not actually registered with the government. You know, on the 4473 that's kept with the FFL, they'll have the name of the gun and all that. But all that's called into the government is that Rob Manis wants to purchase a handgun or a long gun. Yeah, so registries are actually outlawed by the Freedom, was it FOPA, Firearm Owners Protection Act?
Right.
They've outlawed registries, even though the government still has at least three illegal registries.
That's exactly what I was getting to. So the AUSA says, oh, it is a firearm thing, but we're going to still try this guy and send him to prison because he didn't register it.
Correct.
But it's a firearm. Right.
It's protected by the Second Amendment, according to the Department of Justice.
Yeah, it's a firearm right. It's a Second Amendment protected device now. But we're still going to do it.
Correct.
Is this the same AUSA that from the first part of the case, from Peterson
1.0? Well, the guy who came here the very first time, the one who orchestrated and coordinated the political dog and pony show when they brought in over 100 armed, militarized agents with two bomb squad units parked in front of my house. It's never had a bomb here forever. Yeah. But he left. He went to San Antonio, the first one. The other guy kind of stepped up and took over, but he's been running the show ever since. And of course, you know, they're part of that, what do you call it, the fourth branch of government, the bureaucracy.
Sure. Yeah, the bureaucracy.
Yeah. So
this new guy that's acting, he's a career guy. He's not a political appointee.
The one who's been the AUSA, the assistant U.S. attorney, is a regular employee. Okay. The only one that's actually an appointee is going to be your U.S. attorney. And right. The U.S. attorney, usually they're more figureheads that go out to the banquets and awards dinners and, you know, wave and, you know, glad hand and stuff. They're not the ones. I don't even know how much control they have over their assistant U.S. attorneys, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he's not a Trump appointee.
No. Yeah. No.
Okay. So you're still working on a Biden structure then?
Well, I mean, so recently David Kersell was appointed as the U.S. attorney.
Okay.
All right. So we do have a figurehead now. Mm. But what are they doing? You know, Todd Blanche and Harmeet Dillon went to the NRA conference last month, and they said, we're here to stand up for the Second Amendment.
Right.
But they're still prosecuting people and sending them to prison for standing up for their constitutionally protected rights.
Yeah. So, do you get the sense that this is like on autopilot until somebody actually reaches in and turns the engine ignition off?
Well, I mean, they have prosecutorial discretion. After all this, they could sit there and say, "Okay, we won the battle, we won the war, whatever, you know." But really, should you be sending American citizens to prison for their constitutional protected rights? Now, let me just put this into a quick perspective. My attorney, one of my local guys, said it may be constitutionally wrong, but it's statutorily right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a law on the book, but if it's constitutionally wrong and statutorily right, that means that the statute itself is unconstitutional.
Right.
You know, and that's where I'm at. So Peterson 2.0, they came back in with this shall issue regime. They quoted Kavanaugh, Justice Kavanaugh, from when he was a judge in Heller 2, footnote 9, where they said, where Justice Kavanaugh, Judge Kavanaugh at the time, said that while licensing, shall issue licensing, may be constitutional in certain instances because there's criteria being met for training and background and so forth, and, you know, the fees for, you know, the actual application or usage of assigning the license, you know, that a registration scheme is not the same. Kavanaugh said that in footnote 9, Heller 2. He said that registration is not the same as licensing, and to conflate the two would be a half a loaf measure. But the thing is that the three-judge panel in the Fifth Circuit, they only put in their opinion half of what Kavanaugh said. They omitted the other half.
Yeah, took him out of context.
Totally admitted it. And I'm like, this is all prime for the Supreme Court to look at. Yeah.
Well, George, we've got to take a commercial break. We'll continue this conversation. I want to talk to you about this conditional plea and so people understand what's going on with that and why we're where we're at, because I think that's part of it that people need to. We'll be right back with George Peterson, a law-abiding American under the gun, literally, from the weaponized DOJ against Second Amendment rights. Be right back.
Unfortunately, two of those cases have been denied by the court. The first case was Peterson v. United States. Again, this is the NFA case where the question that was presented to the court was, one, whether the National Firearms Act's taxation and registration scheme for covered firearms can be justified as a licensing law, and two, whether the National Firearms Act's taxation and registration scheme violates the Second Amendment with respect to firearm suppressors. So Peterson was a big case. It was supported by amicus briefs from both the Second Amendment Foundation and the GOA, but unfortunately, the court didn't think it was important enough to accept. Now, this case may have arisen from a criminal prosecution, but the questions presented to the court were definitely important enough to consider, but apparently not important enough to accept. So that's it. Petition denied. Now, the next...
What could be more important to take up than a Second Amendment case that's a complex one because of the abuse and misuse of statutory laws against a law-abiding American citizen who's gone through all the process, got their licenses, practices good safety of the devices and the ammunition that they have control over, everything. But no, because of a paperwork issue, the man's going to go to prison for 2 years, I believe. George Peterson is my guest today. We've known each other a long time, George. Tell folks, why did you plead this conditional guilty plea in the first place? What is that?
Well, so in the district court, which is your first step in federal court, my attorney was negotiating behind the scenes with the assistant U.S. attorney and the court on trying to figure a way of not having me have to go through a full jury trial, I guess. And so there was no evidentiary hearing. Mm-hmm. You know, there was just this back room negotiations, and they he agreed with them for me to do a conditional plea agreement if I'm allowed to move this on forward to the appellate court.
Wow.
So plead guilty with the stipulation that you can appeal it. You can bring it to the appellate court.
And normally when you plead guilty, you give up your right to appeal. Is that right?
Correct. Normally, but it seems that this has become more of a common thing because I've seen it in several other cases where they pled guilt. They did a conditional plea agreement with the right to appeal. Yeah. And like specifically, I think it was in Brown or Roberts, one of the cases for which was a machine gun case. Yeah. Now, I'm different than these machine gun cases because, A, mm-hmm. I was not involved with any drugs. I wasn't involved with any kind of murder or assassination or killings or robberies or anything like that. I just had possessed a simple little tube suppressor that I had to take care of my armadillo problem in the backyard.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. So this is called a solvent trap. It's for a .22 caliber firearm, I assume a long rifle or a pistol. What's a solvent trap, and why is it considered a suppressor, I guess?
So a solvent trap is closed at one end, all right? And you screw it onto the barrel, and you can put your cleaning solutions inside the barrel, and you can put your brush up and down the barrel, and it pushes all the solvent into the solvent trap.
Right.
This, because it attaches to the barrel, if you want to, you can tap it, drill it, but that's illegal under the National Firearms Act. But you can drill it, and it becomes a suppressor at that point.
So it really wasn't a suppressor.
It was drilled out to be used as something to muffle the sound so as to not disturb my neighbors.
Yeah.
I could easily have taken a 16-ounce water bottle and used some painter's tape or some masking tape and tape that to the barrel, and I could shoot through a water bottle, and it would still baffle the sound.
Right.
But I guess that would also be illegal.
Yeah. That would be illegal, too, because citizens aren't allowed to have this stuff unless we...
You're not allowed to have hearing protection.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Now, does that still exist today? Do you have to register a suppressor? Because there's been a lot of changes in the law, right?
There has been. And since 2022, when my case started, my case was the tip of the spear of taking down the National Firearms Act. Yeah. But since then, there's been the Hearing Protection Act and the Short Act, and those have been pushed through in Congress. They haven't been passed, though. The Hearing Protection Act was kind of watered down. It was part of the One Big Beautiful Bill. And what they did in there is they actually removed the registration fee from $200, the tax, your registration tax, from $200 down to zero. The intent, and then a lot of members of Congress had written to both the ATF, the DOJ, and the White House that their intent was to remove the thing entirely, and that they should not continue to prosecute people under the NFA. But they ignored that, and they continued to prosecute people like myself for simply exercising my Second Amendment right.
Yeah, I mean, you've had no criminal activity.
No, I was a licensed FFL. I was a concealed carry permit instructor. I taught firearm safety classes. You know, I talked to people about buy a safe. I always did an upsell when I sold someone a handgun. If you're going to carry it in your car, carry this little car safe so you can lock your gun. I always talked about safety and, you know, teaching people how to be competent and responsible gun owners.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole reason for your business. I mean, at one point you had a brick and mortar business when I first met you, didn't you? And you had to move away from that because of government overreach, right?
Obama. That was Obama and Holder with Operation Choke Point, where they weaponized the FDIC to shut down small businesses and gun shops like mine.
So do you think that this is a continued targeting of you as an American citizen, exercising your, not just your, not even just your Second Amendment rights, but exercising your right to be able to have a business and to follow the law and go through the legal procedures to do that? I mean, is this a continued targeting?
So
from Choke Point?
So, you know, I have my own thoughts about this as far as on the local government level, because, you know, yourself, you know, when you get involved in politics and you come in as a change agent, the people in charge don't like that. Like when I ran for councilman in 2011 here in Jefferson Parish. And, you know, I did not go through the process of kissing the ring of the kingmakers. And, you know, is it possible that those people are still targeting me to this day? You know, finding ways to come after me using lawfare. Lawfare is not, you know, strictly with Donald Trump. Lawfare, you know, has been with people. They use the law to come after their opponents and try and change, you know, them to where they can't run for office anymore because they, you know, ruined their reputation, so to speak. Newell Norman sent a SWAT team after me in 2013 because I filed bankruptcy.
That's right.
Federal Bankruptcy Protection Act. And I still wound up with a SWAT team coming to my house.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. You know, why did they see you as such a threat that how many agents showed up fully armed, body armor, automatic weapons?
More than 50. We had a whole slew of people. They had to back up a truck, like a trailer, and get a whole bunch of garbage cans so they could basically seize all my firearms.
Well, do you live in some, like, massive vaulted mansion house on like, 50 acres of property? I mean, that's a lot of people to secure a ranch house.
It was a political dog and pony show. They wanted to put on a show. They actually had sheriff's deputies and ATF agents walking around the neighborhood, talking to my neighbors, telling them all kinds of, you know, stories about me, like I was burning important documents in my barrel, or, you know, I was out, you know, test for having my customers shoot guns in the backyard, which all that was false, you know. And yeah, important documents. I was burning important documents. They pulled out 34 boxes of business and tax records dated back to the 80s. 80s. They pulled that out of my attic. Yeah, I was burning records. I should have burned those records in the attic. You know, I mean, it was definitely an overkill.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've gone through this process and we're at a point now where we went through Peterson 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0. Mm-hmm. And in 3.0, they amended their 2.0 to basically moot or delete any briefs or petitions that FBC and the 2A groups filed. The only thing that they actually ruled on in their opinions, because they didn't want to have the other stuff as part of the record, what they ruled on was the original argument, the original oral argument, and the original filing from my local attorney. And in the 3.0, they said, in addition to the shall issue licensing is what the NFA is, even though it's actually registration. On the form, it says you have a gun registration. So, but in addition to that, they actually put in there, too, that that Peterson did not provide enough evidence that his constitutional rights were violated. And that goes back to my original attorney. He did not present the evidence that I gave him. Over the past 4 years, I gave him so much information that he should have filed with the courts to build up the evidence to the courts, but he refused on many, many cases to give a complete file of complete motion or complete filing. And that's what hurt us. Because that's what they said in 3.0 is that there was not enough evidence provided. And maybe another candidate would be more successful. That's the exact words they said. So if the constitutional rights are good for one, they're good for all.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it should be. But my attorney failed me, and he didn't provide the right information to the courts, information that I gave him.
Right.
And then we went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court basically, they abrogated their Article III constitutional duties by not hearing this case. They say it's because they weren't ready for this case, but that's not the point. They have a duty to protect the Constitution,
right.
And they basically abrogated that duty. So that's where we are and where I'm at now, because I still have my website, repealthenfa.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I have my GoFundMe account set up and everything. And we're still fighting. I'm still fighting. Even though the Supreme Court denied denied to hear my case, there's also a thing called a petition, a 2255 petition, which is a writ of habeas corpus, to do a collateral challenge based on the ineffective assistance of counsel.
That was going to be my next question. Let's speak to that after this last commercial break, George. Right back with George Peterson, another victim of weaponization of government. This time it's on the Second Amendment. We'll be right back.
You woke up with a sore throat and a low-grade fever. You know you are getting sick, so here's your choices. You can get sicker and miss work, try to see a doctor this week, or sit hours in a crowded waiting room at urgent care.
I have a smarter option for you. Open your medical emergency kit, match your symptoms to doctor-recommended prescription in your booklet, and take the right meds now and get well faster.
This is not a first aid kit. It's like having an urgent care in your home. It includes doctor-prescribed medications to treat over 39 medical issues like respiratory infections, strep throat, pneumonia, UTIs, and more.
No waiting to see the doctor and no standing in line at the pharmacy. It's right here.
Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit, and here's how to order.
Go to worldviewhealthcare.com. Your kit to treat dozens of common and serious illnesses is rushed to your door. worldviewhealthcare.com. That's worldviewhealthcare.com.
The emergency kit available at worldviewhealthcare.com. Make sure you don't have to go to urgent care. I got pneumonia. I didn't have to go. I took this last year. Stayed at home. Went to bed.
And somebody's got to step in and stop the madness. We'll talk about that in a moment. But we have another, for the third time, we have a three-judge panel in this criminal case of United States versus George Peterson. This is a case you may recall where George Peterson was arrested by having a unregistered homemade suppressor in his closet. He pled guilty to violating the NFA because of this thing in his closet. By the way, this was a raid that was conducted in 2022 in the Biden administration year. So they were going after these malum prohibitum crimes. As you know, malum and say crimes are things like murder, rape, and robbery. They're evil in and of themselves. Malum prohibitum crimes are the crimes that are just crimes because the legislature says so. Things like, I don't know, jaywalking, for example, or having a gun barrel that's too short or too long or whatever it is. There's nothing moral or inherently evil one way or the other about this stuff. And that also applies to having an unregistered suppressor. Obviously, nothing morally repugnant about that in any respect. It just is illegal because the federal government says so. All right, so with that said, he was arrested, he pled guilty, but he preserved his right to challenge the NFA as applied to him on Second Amendment grounds, which is what he did all the way up to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. You may recall this. There was no fewer than three decisions written by this three-judge panel by the majority author of these opinions, Judge Jennifer Elrod. You may recall that they issued an opinion. Then they said that suppressors were not arms in the first under the text of the Second Amendment. Then the DOJ under Trump came in and says, well, suppressors are protected arms, or at least they're arms under the plain text of the Second Amendment. That required the court to reissue another opinion. Then they withdrew the opinion. Now they've issued another one. So it's really crazy down there. There was also a request for an en banc review for the entire Fifth Circuit, all the judges in the Fifth Circuit, to rehear this case en banc. That was denied as well as part of this George Peterson case involving an unregistered illegal suppressor under the NFA. Okay, with that backdrop.
Welcome back to Truth Thursday. We're live on Worldview Tube and our X Spaces simulcast. And my guest is George Peterson of that case right there today, folks. And you need to hear this over and over again. That's why I played several clips of different people talking about it. They're experts. George had experts weigh in on Amici briefs over and over. Large gun owner organizations, almost all of them, we're supporting him, and the Supreme Court just goes, meh, it's just a Second Amendment right issue. We're not ready for it, and denied his cert. But, George, you were speaking before the break, because when you described the counsel that you had to be, it sounded, the word ineffective jumped into my mind, and you mentioned that you still have an opportunity to file a petition on the grounds of ineffective counsel. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir. That's correct. So we're looking at filing a 2255 petition, which is basically saying that it's a collateral challenge. We're looking to have the case dismissed and set aside based upon ineffective assistance of counsel. It is evident in the opinions of the Fifth Circuit, where they said that there was insufficient evidence presented in my case on my behalf. Mm-hmm. You know, my family, my wife and I, you know, we've been like, we just haven't been getting, you know, anything we tell that attorney, he doesn't put a full effort into presenting it in a petition or a motion. And mm-hmm. where it differs is that with the group that I had from FBC, I could take and talk to that attorney and talk about what I see in common sense, and, you know, and he would turn it into legalese. He would right. take my thoughts, my feelings about my case or about the Second Amendment, the NFA, and he would put it into the brief. Right. He listened, whereas yeah. the first guy didn't listen.
Well, that's good. What are the odds that you'll be successful with that?
I got 2 weeks. I'm supposed to surrender on May 20th.
Okay.
I got to raise money to pay for new attorneys mm-hmm. and also trying to get the gun groups to financially get involved, because it's not cheap. You know, you go a year and a half, you know, with yeah. attorneys, this is like starting all over again.
Yeah, so you've got a site set up to take donations. Where is
I do, I do. Of course, you can find me on Facebook, George A. Peterson, Instagram. I've got text X. I've got X. You can find me there, George Peterson, on X. Of course, you know, I'm talking about the NFA and NFA and my case all over the place, you know, on social media. But my website is repealthenfa.com,
repealthenfa.com, where I have my GoFundMe and my Indiegogo, and I'm getting ready to set up a GiveSendGo and put those links on that page as well. Cool thing about having your own website like that, as you probably know, Colonel, is that I'm putting all the history of what happened with this case onto my website so that I can extrapolate it and write my memoirs. But I'm not stopping. I'm not stopping. You know me personally. I don't stop fighting. And I'm fighting for people's constitutionally protected rights. Yeah. And I'm an expert when it comes to, you know, not just the firearms or whatever, but when it comes to the Constitution and Second Amendment, I mean, John Olerio told me one time that I was probably the most effective and knowledgeable Second Amendment advocate he's ever met. And I've never been to Baton Rouge.
And John Olerio was the Speaker of the Louisiana House twice?
Right. Twice. Yeah, he was a Democrat until he became a Republican in order to stay in the majority.
He was in the Senate, state Senate too, right? So he's been around a while.
He was around for a long time. Yes. Yes.
Well, folks, you heard it right there. What's your website again?
It's repealthenfa.com. repealthenfa.com. And of course, you know, I'm all over on social media. Hmm. You can find me and, you know, look it up yourself. Look at all the YouTube videos and all the news articles. I mean, my case was written in all the major firearm news websites like guns.com and Amalan and stuff like that. And I was amazed at how much notoriety we received. And all I can say is that I'm not going to stop fighting.
Yeah, we can't. We can't. And we need to support you. American citizens need to support you because you're fighting for their rights. At the same time, you know, when government fails to do it, we have to fight for ourselves. This is a fight that's not just worth having. It has to happen. It has to happen. Even if you have to report to prison, we have to keep fighting for the justice for this to get it removed from you and removed from your family. How is your family? How are your kids and your wife? I know this stuff costs a lot of money.
Well, my wife actually had a stroke in December of 2024, and that was a very traumatic thing. She's recovered maybe 75-80%. She's driving and working, but I'm still her primary caregiver. And the children are grown, you know, two in college, one finishing up high school, but they're still traumatized by having guns pointed at them.
Oh, yeah. Armed men coming into your house to arrest you all, essentially, and confiscate all, you know, legally possessed items, those kind of things over a paperwork thing.
Paperwork.
It's incredible.
One thing is too, they took over 300 guns and they gave me a receipt for it, but they took more guns than they gave me a receipt for. There's like maybe 40 or 50 guns that were in stock that are missing and have been missing for 4 years. And my local attorney, I told him to tell the court, tell someone. Mm-hmm. He refused.
Wow. And so on this ineffective counsel appeal, that you can't use your appellate attorneys for that. You have to use a base attorney.
So they could, but those people specialize in appellate.
Right.
Yeah, people specialize in appellate. This is post-conviction. Okay. This is a post-conviction overturning, a motion to overturn the conviction. You know, people from prison usually do this. I'm trying to do this before I'm having to report. And I'm asking for, you know, the court to hold on to forcing me to report based upon the issues, you know, of my family's health and everything. Also, the constitutional issue. The constitutional issue is that the Department of Justice admitted and agreed that suppressors are protected by the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. I should not be reporting to prison based on that alone. Absolutely. But, you know, there's that. And also, my exemplary conduct for the past 4 years. You know, I'm not a troublemaker, you know? I mean, you know, my people who follow me on social media might say differently because I'm loud, but, you know, other than that, you know, you know me.
I know, George.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so that's why I wanted to get to, do you have counsel secured yet?
No, I need money. I need money. Yeah. They want lots. I mean, you know, you're talking about a year's worth of legal, you know, and they need funding, and we're getting some funds. We're getting some action on our GoFundMe through my website, repealthenfa.com. But, you know, we need to raise some funds, and I have a couple of, you know, close friends that I'm reaching out to see if I can secure something to help us to at least get going with this, because time is getting short. 2 weeks.
Yeah. And it's got to be somebody that can practice law in Louisiana, right?
I don't think so. It's a federal case.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Okay.
It's a federal case. All right.
So, I want you to go check out a website, Weaponization Watch.
Okay.
And I'm going to reach out to those folks too. And I'm going to send them the link to this video once I get it posted. Maybe we can get you some help. And folks in the audience, if you have connections that you want to make for George from a legal perspective that might be able to help, please send it to me or Shell, and we'll get them to George as soon as possible, because this is important. You know, if you don't have to go to prison, I'd rather you not go to prison first. Have you, speaking of that, where do you have to report? Do you know yet? Have they told you?
So I got an email from my attorney, the local guy who, you know, but again, only half measures. He just said that my surrender date is May 20th. Didn't tell me where to go.
Okay.
Just that's all I got. Never got a letter, just an email.
Yeah.
So if anybody knows Harmeet Dhillon, Todd Blanche, President Trump, if you can reach out to these guys, you know, on behalf about this case, that would be where we need to start at the top. I got letters being written right now. I'm writing so that I can mail them out certified, you know, and try and see if I can get their attention, because it's like, how have they not been paying attention to this? You know, when you say that you're protecting Second Amendment rights, yet you're sending someone to prison for standing up for their Second Amendment rights.
Folks can share this video right now, this live video, share the post on X and tag those folks. That would be great as a start, and we'll get a post-production version up tomorrow, and we'll tag them in our post to George.
I appreciate
it. Got about 20 seconds left. Remind everybody where to go for to help you financially.
Donations are at the GoFundMe and everything at www.repealthenfa.com. That's repealthenfa.com.
All right, my friend, hang in there. Keep up the fight.
Thank you,
Kevin. We're with you. So, folks, George Peterson, go help him out. This is just another travesty of justice from a weaponized government, and it's got to be stopped. We've got to stop it. And you can go to Weaponization Watch, which I support and I'm working with, and check that out if you want to make a donation there too. We appreciate it. All right. Monday is more Monday. L. Todd Wood, CEO of CDM Press, is back with us. Guess where he's at right now? He's in Lebanon in the war zone, hearing drones and aircraft over the combat zone back in the Hezbollah. Bad guy. So we'll have Todd back on Monday. See you then.